Welcome to New World Notes, edited by yours truly, Kenneth Doust. I found another fine documentary on that admirable British website, Make Wars History. It's 90 minutes long, it's focused on the United States and its constant wars, it's a tapestry of many, many threads, and it's named Why We Fight, same name as Frank Capra's famous propaganda series of the 1940s. For this half-hour broadcast, we'll be following just a few of the film's many interwoven threads. We hear a lot from Chalmers Johnson, who popularized the term blowback, from and about President Dwight David Eisenhower, who warned us about the military-industrial complex, and especially from Wilton Sexer, now a retired New York City police sergeant. Sexer lost a son in the World Trade Center, clamored for revenge against the attack's perpetrators, which he was led to believe were the Iraqis, and persuaded the military to paint the name of his late son on the side of a gigantic bomb which was dropped on the Iraqi people. He's now struggling to cope with his new understanding that Iraq was not involved in any way with 9/11, and that he had been lied to, abused, and played for a sucker by his own government. It's a touching story, and I'm going to step aside and let it begin. Why We Fight.
I was on my way into work, and I was taking the subway, which is elevated subway. And as the subway heads to New York, there comes a point where it makes a very abrupt left-hand turn, almost a 90-degree turn. And when it does that, the wheels of the subway always screech loudly. If you look out the window, that's when you can see the World Trade Center. I was sitting on the subway reading, as I always do. Train made the left-hand turn. The wheels screeched. Everybody in the car jumped up and started to gasp. Oh! And I look up, and there's the building with smoke pouring out of it. I didn't know if that was my son's building, because Tower 1 and Tower 2 were in perfect symmetry. And I didn't know which tower I'm looking at. And I'm just thinking to myself, you know, how did my son get out of there? Well, I don't know how, but he got out of there. There's no two ways about that. He can't be in there. Because anybody who's in there is going to die.
Chalmers Johnson.
Blowback. It's a CIA term. Blowback does not mean simply the unintended consequences of foreign operations. It means the unintended consequences of foreign operations that were deliberately kept secret from the American public, so that when the retaliation comes, the American public is not able to put it in context, to put cause and effect together, that they come up with questions like, why do they hate us?
The forces of evil declared war on the Americans.
Not since Pearl Harbor has there been so much national
freedom and democracy are under attack.
Why do they hate us? That's the question everybody's asking.
Our government did not want the forensic question asked, what were their motives, and instead chose to say they were just evildoers.
And the towers keep falling. Every 5 minutes, they go to the tower again. I got on the phone, I called NBC. I'm listening to your newscast. How many times are you going to show those goddamn towers coming down? Don't you have any respect for the people who have family and friends in those towers? Do we have to keep watching them fall down? I watched them fall down 50 times already. When are you going to stop? Please stop. You're ripping my heart out.
To win a war against people that hate freedom.
God gave me two of the greatest sons any parent could ever asked for. Why he took one back, I'll never know.
I can hear you, the rest of the world hears you, and the people who knocked these buildings down will hear all of us soon.
Somebody had to pay for this. Somebody had to pay for 9/11. I want enemy dead. I want to see their bodies stacked up for what they did, for taking my son.
There was a moment when the entire world was behind us. There was a million people demonstrating in the streets of Tehran in favor of the United States. We had the world behind us. Now kids are dying. Billions are being spent every month. Animosity against the United States is stronger now than it ever has been in history. What happened here? Is it just the experience of September 11th? Or is there something else going on here? When something like this happens, you've got to take stock of this. You've got to understand what went wrong here.
Gore Vidal.
We live here in the United States of amnesia. No one remembers anything before Monday morning. Everything is a blank. We have no history.
Guatemala, 1954. The United States intervened unilaterally to protect its vital interests. Lebanon, 1958. The United States feels its policy of containment in the Middle East is threatened. Responds openly and unilaterally. The United States intervened
in Laos, the Congo, Brazil.
There are so many theories about what happened in Iraq and why we really went in. But when you look at the history of the United States, almost every president, there is something we don't like somewhere in the world, and we've got to dispense military force.
Ronald Reagan invaded Grenada in 1983.
Last night, I ordered U.S. military forces to Panama.
This is not about one president or one party. We fight as a nation because we perceive it is in our interest to fight. And we then mention words like freedom. And nice common values that who can be against freedom when, in fact, much more has been going on privately.
Just completed a meeting with our national security team, and we've received the latest intelligence updates. The deliberate and deadly attacks which were carried out yesterday against our country were more than acts of terror. They were acts of war.
September 11th, 2001, provided a group of people deeply committed to the expansion of the American empire the opportunity to implement plans that they had been laying since 1992. At that time, a young Paul Wolfowitz was working in a subordinate position under Dick Cheney, who was then Secretary of Defense in the Pentagon. With the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, Cheney orders Wolfowitz to write a plan, to write a grand strategy, that it was now our destiny, that without the Soviet Union, there is no one who can possibly approach us in military terms. It says that's the way it ought to be, and our policy must be to maintain and expand that, that we are the new Rome. That's their strategy. On 9/11, they begin to implement it.
I can remember in the Pacific when the word spread that the bombs had been dropped. 99.9% of us were delighted because we'd been convinced that if Japan was not hit by nuclear weapons, 1 million of us would be killed. Drop those bombs and they will surrender. Well, they were trying to surrender all that summer, but Truman wouldn't listen because Truman wanted to drop the bombs.
Why?
To show off, to frighten Stalin, to change the balance of power in the world, to declare war on communism. Perhaps we were starting a preemptive world war. Eisenhower hated the dropping of them and thought it should not have been done.
Well, he just thought war was terrible enough as it was. I cannot trace the evolution in my dad's thinking. He was complex. He was a five-star general, but he was never a military fanatic. Never. One night in July of 45, that day, the Secretary of War had told my father about the development of the atomic weapon, atomic bomb. We were sitting up in his bedroom, and he said that his own first impression, his own emotion had been to be feeling down low. He wished we hadn't invented it.
In the background was the growing conflict between two great powers to shape the post-war world. Already, an iron curtain had dropped around Poland, Hungary, Yugoslavia.
You see, we had to fight communism wherever it was in the world. So a decision was made that the United States remain militarized permanently.
We lack the weapons to defend ourselves. Build, prepare is the cry.
Quickly, the government springs into action and initiates a gigantic rearmament program. A program designed to make America the arsenal of democracy.
From that moment on, the American empire was in every corner of the earth.
In Burma and Iceland.
We were going to maintain dominance, not just of Europe, and not just of Japan, but of the entire globe.
This is one of my favorite pictures of all time, smiling with his two teeth. Man, Jason, what can I do for my son's memory? I'm not a millionaire. I can't build schools and libraries. I'm just a regular cop living on a pension. I want to be able to do something so that hopefully one day I can go over to my son's grave and tell him that I've done something in his memory that hopefully will be a step in preventing another attack like that.
Iraq continues to flaunt its hostility toward America and to support terror. This is a regime that has something to hide from the civilized world.
The invasion of Iraq in 2003 is to a very considerable extent about repositioning the United States as the country that must be obeyed. It's an easy way to send a signal to the planet that the United States is in charge and it's going to do what it wants, and anybody who defies the United States will be punished.
The point in many ways for these guys wasn't just to topple Saddam, it was to transform the Middle East. They want to take the U.S. military and go in and shore up American interest in the key area of the world. And that's their vision. They want to spread democracy around the world on the point of our bayonets.
Defense budgets throughout the Western world doubled or tripled in the 4 years between 48 and 52.
The Soviets are outproducing America's aircraft factories.
There is a threat, but we can't measure how much is enough defense spending to stop the Soviet Union. So by the time Eisenhower is president, there is a huge new flow of cash into defense industries.
He was the first to acknowledge that a permanent military establishment would be required during this period, but that unless we could find some kind of breakthrough, that in fact it would end up creating a terrible cost.
The cost of one modern heavy bomber is this: a modern brick school in more than 30 cities.
It is two electric power plants, each serving a town of 60,000 population. It is two fine, fully equipped hospitals.
We pay for a single fighter plane with a 500,000 bushels of wheat.
We pay for a single destroyer with new homes that could have housed more than 8,000 people.
This is not a way of life at all, in any true sense. Under the cloud of threatening war, it is humanity hanging from a cross of iron.
My father, as president, had strong guiding principles. He used to say, modern weapons take food from the hungry and shelter from the homeless. And so he was fighting with the Pentagon all the time for asking for too much and Congress for giving it to him.
I don't think we should pay 1 cent for defense more than we have to.
Well, Eisenhower saw us starting to build program after program that was just out of control. And his own ability to shape national security policy was being hemmed in by these forces he couldn't control, and he was the president.
On at least one occasion, Eisenhower was heard to say by those in the room, "God help this country when somebody sits at this desk who doesn't know as much about the military as I do."
President Eisenhower.
My fellow Americans, this evening I come to you with a message of leave-taking and farewell, and to share a few final thoughts with you, my countrymen. We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. 3.5 million men and women are directly engaged in the defense establishment. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications. in the councils of government, we must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. The potential for the disastrous rise of misplaced power exists and will persist.
You have to realize this is one of the great presidents, great military leaders. On his way out the door, at the end of his second term, he says, by the way, watch out for the military-industrial complex.
People know that he invented the phrase military-industrial complex, but very rarely do you see the whole thing and realize how utterly strident his warning was. I think it's one of the most profound statements ever made by an American president.
Just like George Washington gave his warnings about foreign entanglements and things like that, my dad was giving his warning against letting this military-industrial complex get out of hand.
We must never let the weight of this combination endanger our liberties or democratic processes.
I arrived in Vietnam in July of 1965. I was part of the buildup to 50,000 troops. I remember saying to one of my buddies, you know, this keeps up. They're going to have 100,000 troops over here. And he laughed. He said, what are you, nuts? They'd have to declare war for 100,000 troops.
My fellow Americans, renewed hostile actions against United States ships on the high seas in the Gulf of Tonkin have today required me to order the military forces of the United States to take action in reply.
I was assigned to a helicopter company, 13th Aviation Battalion. I was a door gunner on one of the helicopters. It was quite an experience for, you know, a 21-year-old kid. You're involved in taking people's lives. From the perspective of a helicopter, you're up X number hundreds of feet, and you're shooting at little dots that are running around. You're not shooting at somebody face to face.
Okay, there's a blue shirt on a trail down there. Come on, right! Okay, there, got a dick.
It's almost like they're not real human beings. They're objects. They're objects. I grew up knowing that should the situation arise, you were expected to answer the call when your country made the call. There was no such thing as, well, I wonder if my country's right. Is anybody lying to me about this? You don't grow up thinking that. You grow up saying, if the bugle calls, you go. Well, as you know, as time went on and we found out, well, this whole Gulf of Tonkin thing was BS and nobody was really attacked. So you say to yourself, you know what? That's really crap, man. Why did somebody lie to us? There was no need to lie.
We have been lied to in every military escapade, frankly, over the last 50 or 60 years, without exception. There's no better example, probably, than Vietnam, where you had the President of the United States and the top generals in the Pentagon out and out lying about the Gulf of Tonkin incident and got us into the war, about the casualties, about how the war was going. Anyone who has ever looked closely at the Vietnam War can see that the public and the media were manipulated substantially. We don't like to think of ourselves as a militant nation, but we are in fact an incredibly militant and militaristic nation. It's not a view of ourselves that we want to carry around, but the fact is we are. If the president and the military-industrial complex, the defense establishment, if they all have decided that suddenly there's a problem somewhere, we need to drop some bombs or even put land forces somewhere in some country, this is a ritual that we have been seeing for decades. We've toppled governments, we've done coup d'etats, we've used intelligence services for covert purposes and done horrible things around the world, and we have put up with the most heinous human rights abusing countries. We have propped them up, we've even trained them how to commit human rights abuses. Today's demon was yesterday's friend, all in the name of either the Cold War or for commercial reasons. It's basically economic colonialism. No one uses the colonialism word, but instead of just taking over the countries, we have a better way. We just go in and have free markets, whether we're trying to sell our products to their citizens or we're trying to mine their resources. We need to be in that country for some reason, and therefore we're going to talk about free markets, free trade. But what's really going on is we want our companies to get rich in your country.
These guys were manipulating public opinion, okay, creating falsehoods and fantasies to inspire fear in the American people so that they could have their war.
The President of the United States.
If war is forced upon us, we will fight with the full force and might of the United States military, and we will prevail.
Evidence from intelligence sources, secret communications, and statements by people now in custody reveal that Saddam Hussein aids and protects terrorists, including members of Al-Qaeda.
I remembered when I was in Vietnam, we used to get requests, can you put my father, my son's name on the side of the helicopter? Can you put it on a rocket? I said, you know what? That's a good idea. I'm going to do that. I'm going to try to do that. So I sent out emails to the Secretary of all the armed forces. I'm a retired New York City Police Department sergeant and a proud Vietnam veteran. I lost my son on 9/11. I can't tell you in words what his loss means to me. I would respectfully request if you could put his name on some piece of armament in the Iraq War. You know, we haven't caught bin Laden, but, you know, let's do something here. Who was responsible? Come on, let's hit him. Iraq was responsible. Good, let's go. You say Iraq? Let's go. Let's get in there. Let's kick the hell out of them.
It turns out it's not that hard to get a country to go to war. That even in a country like the United States, where there is freedom of information and multiple media channels, that an administration can just dominate the debate, dominate the argument.
We have this idea that we have lots of information available. There's so much that's not available, and so much of the truth, quote unquote, is obscured by political actors who don't want the world to see what they're doing.
Dan Rather.
What's going on, I'm sorry to say, is a belief that the public doesn't need to know.
The policy is.
I'm working my way over to figuring out how I won't answer that.
Limiting access, limiting information to cover the backsides of those who are in charge of the war is extremely dangerous and cannot and should be accepted. Now, I'm sorry to say that up to and including the moment of this interview, that overwhelmingly it has been accepted.
I think I was reading something about the bombing in Iraq, and I get this email to Major Thomas V. Johnson from Lieutenant Commander Stephen Franzoni, the private to the corporal to the captain to this. All, it must have been like 42 emails, and some of them were saying, well, I don't know if we can do this.
Sirs, normally we do not take personal requests. Son died on 9/11, wants to know if we could put name on bomb.
Passing it up, Harry, this is Jerry. Do you think we can do something like that?
Joe, fairly easy, don't you think?
Well, we'll look into it. Let me go ask Harry. And you read this whole list of emails.
Sorry for the delay, but business is booming. The weapons don't stay still long enough to write on them.
And finally, it goes to this Marine Air Division. Can do. Semper Fi. Boop, boop, boop. I get back to pictures. I'm looking at the picture. I'm saying, holy smokes. There's a picture of a bomb, and then a close-up of the same bomb, and on the side of it, in loving memory of Jason Sexton. And the story that this is a 2,000-pound guided bomb, and that it was dropped on April 1st, and it met with 100% success.
How we defend our country in the
21st century.
Four more U.S. troops lost their lives today in Iraq.
The only son I had.
With U.S. casualties mounting in Iraq.
Our bombs exploded and two of us were shed there today on a horrific scale.
Under fire from critics who charge he's been blurring the lines between Iraq and 9/11, President Bush was forced to clarify yesterday.
We've had no evidence that Saddam Hussein was involved with the September the 11th. Now, what the vice president said was said, that he had...
What did you just say?
I mean, I almost jumped out of a chair. I don't know where people got the idea that I connected Iraq to 9/11. Was he nuts or what? What the hell did we go in there for? We're getting back for 9/11. Well, if you didn't have anything to do with 9/11, why are we going in there? I was mad. My first thought is, you know, you're a liar. I'm from the old school. Certain people walk on water. And President of the United States is one of them. If I can't trust the President of the United States, I don't know. It's a terrible thing when American citizens can't trust their president. You begin to wonder, what the hell is with the whole system? There's something wrong with the entire system. The government exploited my feelings of patriotism, of a deep desire for revenge, for what happened to my son. But I was so insane with wanting to get even, I was willing to believe anything. Undoubtedly, there are people who may listen to my statements and think that I'm no good, that I'm an SOB, I'm a warmonger, I'm this, I'm that, whatever. I should never put my son's name on it. I should be ashamed that I put my son's name on it. Am I sorry I asked for my son's name to be put on the bomb? No, because I acted under the conditions at that time. Was it wrong? Yeah, it was wrong, but I didn't know that. So, is it regrettable?
The reason we're in Iraq, first off, has not honestly been told to the American people. It certainly had nothing to do with the liberation of the Iraqi people. It was never part of the agenda, and it's not part of the agenda now.
We know we did not have an exit strategy in the invasion of Iraq because we didn't intend to leave. We are in the process right now of building 14 permanent bases in Iraq.
There is this incredible hubris right now that we are invincible and we are the preeminent power on planet Earth. American power and American empire is actually flaunted in people's faces around the world, where we rub our shoe in their face and tell them that we're top dog. And you will work with us because you sure as hell don't want to be against us.
You've been listening to selections from the video Why We Fight. I hope to offer other selections in the future. New World Notes comes to you from the spacious underground studios of WWUH-FM, a community service of the University of Hartford. For more information, my email address, and other good stuff, please see our website, newworldnotes.blogspot.com. Illegitimi non carborundum, and hope to see you again next week.